Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. When it comes to fracking, of course, that's the short form of the term hydraulic fracturing, the numbers are only going up. Drillers tapped 85 wells in Ohio in 2012, according to the latest state figures. And by the end of next year, we could have up to 1,500 horizontal drilling wells in Ohio. 1,500 wells by the end of 2015. Based on permit projections. As those numbers grow, along with jobs and the economic impact, so do concerns about the environment and for the folks who live near these wells. During this hour, we'll hear from oil and gas industry spokesman for the industry and from an environmental group leading the charge for stricter regulation. But joining us now to sort of lay the groundwork and tell us where we're at in this industry is Andy Chow. He's a reporter for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Andy, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Andy, we've been hearing for years that the boom is coming, the natural gas boom, the fracking boom is coming to Ohio. Has it arrived?
Well, if it hasn't arrived, it's definitely on its way. At least that's what state officials want to believe. It definitely seems like the main thing to come out of the report last week, which was the state of the play announced by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and other state agencies, it seems like the main takeaway is the numbers are going up, the numbers will continue to go up, and it's because these companies that are coming to Ohio are really starting to understand how the shale works, the little intricacies, how to drill, where to go, everything like that. And they're beginning to really get a good grasp on what they need to do. And so they're saying that the industry, the horizontal drilling and shale industry in Ohio is maturing.
We went from 13 billion cubic feet of natural gas from fracking in 2012 to 100 billion cubic feet in 2013. That's a nearly a tenfold increase. Mm-hmm. How does that align with the projections that we heard 5 years ago?
I think it might be a little bit less than what they were hoping for, but they seem to remain optimistic that this will continue to grow, that the numbers will continue to grow. ODNR says that a big thing that's happening right now is that when companies are coming in 2010, the average time it took to drill a well was about 30 days. And now, at least from last year, they've cut that in half. So now it takes about 15 days to drill a well. And if you can cut that time in half, then you're definitely going to really see a spike in numbers.
So that then once you've drilled it, you can start extracting the natural gas. How does it work? I mean, you drill the well. What's the lifespan of a well? I guess it depends on the well, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that all depends on how many resources they hope to take out of it. Once you drill the well, they go down and then they turn horizontally and then they shoot the liquid down there in order to crack that shale open and bring all the natural gas up. So I guess it depends on how much resources is down there to begin with. So I'm not sure what the average time it takes from beginning to plugging the well.
We're talking about the state of the fracking industry in Ohio, both the economic impact and benefit of this industry and also the environmental impact and possible dangers here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. With me now is Andy Chow from Ohio Public Radio. Natural gas gets all the attention, but if I recall, the thing that really was intriguing to the energy companies was the oil, the wet oil that they could get out of the ground in Ohio, and those projections were downgraded a bit. What's the status of the oil production?
Yeah, you're right. That's something that everybody wanted as well because it's something that's a little more rare and something that can be turned into a lot of different things once it's extracted. And again, that turns out to maybe be a little bit lower than what they maybe projected a couple of years ago. But still, as they say, it's on course, and they expect next year's numbers and the year after that to be much larger.
As far as the geography and where they're drilling, where they're finding the natural gas and the oil, that hasn't changed. We're still talking mainly the eastern one-third of the state. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Utica shale that takes up the eastern part of the state.
Mm-hmm. 292 8513 is our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What has it meant to the landowners in the eastern part of the state?
Well, I think it all depends on who the landowner is. I think some people have been very excited to sign these lease agreements, to see some royalties coming in. Other people are kind of seeing the downsides to it. We're seeing some reports about the spill in Morgan County that's kind of taken up some people's land and everything. And now as the cleanup continues, people are seeing that, well, now there's oil and mud and chemicals on my land that now needs to be cleaned up. And so maybe if a neighbor sees that, if somebody else reads that in the newspaper, maybe people start thinking, oh, maybe I don't, maybe it's not worth it. Maybe it's not worth going into these agreements. But I think it's definitely split even. Some people want it. Some people are okay with it.
How about the communities in the eastern part of the state? How are the roads clogged with trucks and workers? And are the housing prices increasing because folks are moving into town to work on these wells?
That's definitely the little consequences, little circumstances that come from the industry coming in that we're now starting to see. We're seeing a lot of people coming into the state house saying, hey, just so you know, because the industry is coming in here, it's really changing the dynamic of our town. It's really sending prices up. It's doing this. It's doing that. One thing that we consistently hear about at the state house is RUMA, the Road Use Management Agreement. And what that does is, hey, if you're going to come into our town, if you're going to drill and create well pads and everything, you're going to bring in these big trucks, then you need to make sure that our local roads are taken care of in the meantime. And those are things that are taken care of on the local level right now. Some people want the state to come in and regulate that a little bit more, but that's something that we might be seeing more of in the future.
How does that fall to the responsibility of the drilling companies? I'm thinking about, you know, what we would look at here in the suburban or in a sprawling area of Columbus. You know, you build a mall, it's up to the city and town to get you the roads, to get the customers there. And if it increases traffic, a lot of times the city or town has to play catch up and widen the roads or improve the signals and things like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it differs from those kinds of situations. What I can say is that instead of a mall, which is a one-time thing and then it's done, this is something that's going to keep, trucks are going to keep coming in and out, doing things. If it's not drilling, then it's transporting material here and there and everything else.
And natural gas prices. Are we starting to see the benefit here in Ohio and in our natural gas bills because of this boom, or is it still too early for that?
We're hearing people say that the natural gas prices are going down a little bit, and it's definitely helping. It's almost that Ohio is becoming more sustainable, that it's growing some independence because it's the gas is here, we're drilling it here, and the people in Ohio are receiving the benefits of that. And an example from the state of the play last week is that when we went through this bad winter weather and everything was cold, that Ohioans were really able to benefit from lower natural gas prices and able to heat up their home. Mm-hmm.
The state of the play is the report issued by ODNR, correct? The state officials on what the state of the play, the natural gas play. It's a very benign title.
Because a piece of shale, the Utica Shale, is called the play. So state of the play.
So it sounds like a rec league or something like that. You mentioned the environmental impacts. We've heard there have been earthquakes involving the injection wells. Those aren't the fracking wells. The injection wells are the disposal wells where they get rid of all the bad stuff, the bad side byproducts of fracking.
And Ohio has a lot of those injection wells compared to other states.
Because we're getting fracking materials from Pennsylvania and West Virginia and other states. So there are earthquakes there. They were tied to earthquakes to actual fracking. Where does that stand right now?
Well, that was definitely a major announcement that came out earlier this year that it's been general knowledge that injection wells can be tied to earthquakes. Well, now we're finding out that there is a horizontal fracking well in Mahoning County that they believe to find a link to earthquakes. And so now they're not only keeping an eye on these injection wells, but they are keeping an eye on these horizontal fracking wells and implementing new standards as far as that is concerned. So now when a company wants to drill and frack in an area that's known to have seismic activity, they must implement new seismic monitoring to make sure that what they're doing should and won't cause earthquakes. Shouldn't.
it's kind of sort of a catch-22 because these areas may not have had seismic activity before the fracking, and now there is seismic activity, so that it's, so current wells may have to put a little, you know, seismograph on there to see if it, they're causing earthquakes at some point.
Yep, and then if it does seem like they are causing the earthquakes, then they have to stop operations.
I see. And these earthquakes are not, you know, bone rattling earthquakes. They're relatively minor, they don't cause any damage.
Relatively minor. Yeah, I think the biggest ones scaled at around the 3.0 Richter scale. Mm-hmm.
292-8513. If you'd like to join our conversation with Andy Chow, reporter from Ohio Public Radio. He is he's covered the energy issues at the State House and around the state for several years now. He knows what's going on backwards and forwards with regards to hydraulic fracturing, which is our topic of discussion today here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. There have been two accidents in the past 3 months, both involving fires and spills and contamination of creeks. Mm-hmm. Freak accidents, or should we expect more of these in the months and years to come?
I think only time will tell if these are freak accidents. Maybe a couple years go by without another accident and we'll say, oh, that was just not the norm. But there's definitely a cause for concern right now because they were pretty much right next to each other. One happened and then a month or two later the other happened. So the one that's happening right now, the one that's gaining a lot of concern is the fire that happened in Monroe County.
Which is far eastern Ohio.
Right. And what ODNR is saying is that they're still investigating what happened. There was a fire. It spread to the fire trucks that were lined up on the well pad. And what happened was because there was this big fire and clouds of smoke and everything, the firefighters had to douse this drilling pad with water. And because of that, all the water mixed in with the drilling mud and the chemicals and everything like that, it all flooded off and hit a nearby stream. And what ODNR is now investigating is that they've discovered that there's been a large fish kill in that Possum Creek. And they've found that anywhere between 70,000 and 100,000 fish have been killed. Now, they haven't been able to say that, yes, because of that fire and because of the flood that sent all these chemicals into the creek, that these fish were killed. They haven't been able to make that link, but they're saying there's a probable connection.
Well, yeah, unless there was, you know, some kind of H1N1 virus that also hit those fish at the same time. I mean, I know they have to be cautious, but, you know, 1 plus 2 equals 3 usually, right? Also, 25 families were evacuated because of fear about the black smoke that came in that resulted from the fire as well. But that's still under investigation.
Right, that's still under investigation. I believe the U.S. EPA says that the cloud and everything that was created, it's now that harm has been eradicated, but I believe they're still investigating everything that happened because of that fire.
It was caused by, according to reports, a malfunction of equipment caused the fire. It wasn't actually the drilling itself didn't cause the fire. It was the operation associated with the drilling. There's been no word on negligence or if more regulation could have prevented this. That's still too early and still to be determined, correct?
Right.
All right. Andy Chow is with the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. He covers the fracking industry for us here at WOSU and other stations around the state. So when we come back, we will hear from an environmental advocate and a representative of the oil and natural gas drillers and get their take on the state of fracking in Ohio here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about the state of the fracking industry here in Ohio. We're trying to figure out where exactly we are in the lifespan of this industry. Are we still in the infancy or are we starting to really hit the boom stage? Drillers tapped 85 wells in Ohio in 2012. In the first 6 months of this year, the state has approved some 350 permits for shale wells, and they expect to approve another 350 by the year's end. So the industry seems to be taking off. It's meant jobs. It's meant economic impact for some communities in eastern Ohio that really could use a good shot in the arm. But many, such as Former Youngstown Mayor Jay Williams say the state should proceed with caution.
It's about finding a balance between the jobs and the economic opportunities that are inherent in the oil and gas and the energy industry, and at the same time being protective of the environment, the air and the water. The president has made it very clear that making sure that we have clean air and clean water, not only for those of us who are living now, but future generations, is not something that we're willing to casually toss aside in light of the economic opportunities.
That was former Youngstown Mayor Jay Williams. Still with us on All Sides is Andy Chow from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. And joining the conversation now is Nathan Johnson. He's an attorney with the Ohio Environmental Council. Nathan, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Also joining us is Tom Stewart. He's executive vice president of the Ohio Oil and Gas Association. Tom, welcome to All Sides.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Tom, let's talk about the state of the play, as the state is calling it, the state of the industry. Has it met the expectations of a few years ago as far as the drillers are concerned?
I believe so. It's smaller than, aerially speaking, than what we anticipated 4 years ago, and that's simply a function of drilling exposing reservoir characteristics and production characteristics. The director Zeringer said it at State of the Play event that happened last week. This is primarily a natural gas play. The natural gas has high value because it has high heating value, which means there's other constituents there besides methane. Mm-hmm. That's both a cost for getting into transporting natural gas and an opportunity, because if you can extract those products, there's further value to be had.
You say that the footprint is smaller than expected. How much smaller than expected?
This is primarily located in eight counties in eastern Ohio. The play is pushing to the south, to the surprise of some of the players. The opportunities up north seem limited. There has been some good wells found up north in Mahoning County and Trumbull County, but they don't compare to the wells that have been established in the southern end of the play.
Originally, how many? You said eight counties are really active right now. How many counties was the most optimistic projection five years ago?
If you look at a map of the Utica Shale across the state of Ohio, you will find that the Utica is present geologically across the majority of the state of Ohio. I live in Fairfield County, and there's a Utica well that was discovered by accident 15 years ago that produced oil still out there today. Would it produce in economic quantities if you had to drill it horizontally? Probably not. That's a function of technology, and that's called the oil window. The oil window right now is not working very well.
That's the difference between the natural gas, the sort of dry gas, I guess you could call it, and dryish. Yeah. And oil. The oil that's used in lubrication or things like that, that has not panned out as well as some had hoped, correct?
That is correct. You will see in the numbers that were reported last week in the State of the Shale Play that presents some pretty dramatic oil numbers. I believe that majority of that number is condensate, which is a very high gravity, very light crude. It's almost straight round gasoline. It evaporates very quickly. It is not what we call black oil, which is a lower grade where they make a lot of things out of. And it's really a function of geology. And it's hard to get oil to move through very thin fractures. It's easy to get natural gas. It's hard to get crude oil. Think about pushing molasses through a cocktail straw as instead of just blowing through it.
And you don't know exactly what you're going to get out of the earth until you start drilling, correct?
There's only one way to find out. You got to drill a hole in the ground. That's the reality of the oil and gas business.
Even with all the technology and the geology and the science and how that's advanced over the years since, you know, the Beverly Hillbilly days, it's still you got to put a hole in the ground and see what comes up, right?
That fact has not changed since 1860.
Interesting. 292-8513 is our number if you'd like to give us a call. We're talking about the hydraulic fracturing industry in Ohio, the state of the play, as the industry likes to call it. What is the state of the industry? You can join the conversation by email also at allsides@wosu.org. Nathan Johnson from the Ohio Environmental Council. This is a tough industry. It has a lot of promise, but it also has a lot of risk. What is the state of the regulation in Ohio right now?
Well, we have a very long way to go, unfortunately. And to couch this in terms of what has been happening, sort of the darker side of the shale play, what we've been seeing, has been mentioned, we've had earthquakes in Youngstown, something like 100 earthquakes, including a pretty large one. Fairly recently this year, we had an earthquake associated with an actual production operation. And then we've got, I think in early May, we had an uncontrolled blowout at a well pad in Morgan County. That ended up, you know, releasing thousands of gallons of chemicals and liquids into a stream and neighboring fields. That's a pollution event that's still being dealt with right now. And of course, you know, this 2 weekends ago, we had this massive fire in Monroe County, the 5 Mile Fish Kill. You know, tens of thousands of dead fish. There are so many areas that we need to improve. We are still in the fairly early stages of the shale play. In terms of regulations, you know, where was the chemical disclosure, for instance, 2 weekends ago at the Monroe County site, when firefighters from several counties came in, when the Ohio EPA was there, when ODNR was there? What sort of chemical disclosure was there? It's my understanding there was probably very little. And chemical disclosure, as we know, is very important. It's a public health issue. If we have uncontrolled releases of chemicals into the stream, may well have killed those fish. It's a hazard to the workers there. Right now, the way the law is set up in Ohio, the only authority that has access to proprietary information, basically chemicals that would otherwise be secret, mm-hmm. is the chief of ODNR. And that's the agency that regulates oil and gas for the most part in the state.
I know the disclosure of the chemicals and what's in it, but how would regulation have prevented mm-hmm. these two incidents that happened this spring? How would it increase? I mean, mm-hmm. getting energy out of the earth is a messy business.
Right.
It just is. It always has been, whether you're burning logs or whether you're getting mm-hmm. oil or coal. How would regulation have prevented these accidents?
Yeah, I'll get to that, but very quickly. You know, the first responders do not have access to these chemicals. What's happening with drinking water? You know, Opossum Creek goes right out to the Ohio River. There are drinking water intakes there. Drinking water authorities, you know, local water treatment water companies don't have access to this information. They literally would have to sue the company to get this information. But in terms of what could have prevented it, that's a good question. A lot of times, you know, sometimes these things may not be preventable. But one thing that I can say is right now ODNR does not have regulations on the books specifying how you're properly to construct a well pad site. No secondary containment rules. So really nothing, very little on the books specifying how you're supposed to construct a site to prevent, you know, spillage or massive discharges when a problem like this occurs.
Tom Stewart from the Oil and Natural Gas Association. Let's take these one at a time. First, this has been a bone of contention since this industry started in Ohio, is the disclosure of the fracking materials. The industry claims that this is proprietary information. It's a trade secret. It gives them an advantage over their competitors. They don't want to release the information. But when firefighters arrive at a scene, don't they have a right to know what's in the stuff they're putting water on or flame retardants on?
The problem with what you just heard is that we're confusing two different issues. Since Senate Bill 315, and certainly since Senate Bill 165 in 2010.
And those two bills did what? Regulated the industry?
They did many things, but one of the things they did in both bills was provide full disclosure of fracking chemicals. The debate in 315 was about 5% of the chemicals are going through research and development, and they're held proprietary information like any other industry would. Medical professionals can get access to that information even though it's proprietary, and the Ohio Medical Society has written letters saying that they feel very comfortable with that. What happened over in Monroe County? It's not to be confused with frack disclosure or frack chemicals. What happened there was a hydraulic hose broke, and they had a fire because heat contacted oil, and they had a fire. What killed things out there was that they put firefighters put foam on there. What happened out there in Monroe County was that the company had a plan in case of emergency. They executed their plan with precision. They worked well with local authorities. They put out the fire in a correct way. Foam got off the site. Foam was needed to kill the fire. Apparently, there might have been a fish kill.
Andy, go.
Well, so I guess my question is, it seems like the foam was close enough to a stream. Were they in regulation? Were they following regulations as far as setback from the stream then, or?
Oh, Andy, I would say that if they constructed that pad exactly how the ODNR told them to construct their pad. It is true that the pad construction rules have not been fully promulgated yet, but they're out there, and they're out there for public comment. Ohio Environmental Council can comment on them. I'm sure they will, as well as anybody else. But the problem is that they are already applying those through special permit conditions. These people are drilling 6 or 7 wells on a well pad. Each one of these costs $10 million. You have a $70 million investment. They want their pad to hold up. The thing is that nobody got hurt. Nobody died. No buildings burned down. Everything was executed according to plan in case of emergency. The foam was needed to put the fire out. The foam got into the creek.
We're talking fracking industry here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Join the conversation, 292-8513, or by email at allsides@wosu.org. Tom, you mentioned that the regulations involving the construction of the well pads still are not final yet. And we are looking at 1,500 permits by the end of next year. Isn't that a bit of closing the barn door after the horse is already out? If I know you say the companies want to protect their investment and everything else, but there have been countless examples throughout history where, you know, you cut a corner here, you cut a corner there.
You got to remember, it's been Ohio law since the oil and gas statute has been created back in the 60s that the chief has the authority to apply what's called special permit conditions in order to protect health, safety, and the environment, in his judgment. When they issue these permits, they essentially are issuing pad construction requirements to these permits and are overseen in many stages through the construction. So it's happening right now, but they need to promulgate the rule, and we support promulgating the rule.
Mm-hmm. Nathan.
You know, it shouldn't take a couple of years into the process of the shale play to come out with rules that are this fundamental, you know, well pad construction. And I would like to say as well, you know, with drinking water, we don't know what went into that stream. You know, water utilities, they need that information very quickly so they can scan for, you know, individual chemical constituents. And like I had mentioned, some of those are proprietary. They would literally have to sue. That could take a very long time to get that information. That's a change we need.
But you got to remember that what happened out there was not because of the hydraulic fracturing or the fact that there was chemicals in the fracturing mix that was going downhole. The well was secured and shut in. All wells on the site are secured and shut in. What went in there was the foam. Pick up the bag and look at the foam. And as for chemical disclosure, all producers under federal law and state law must report under SER Title III Community Right to Know Laws, IPCRA, what they do to the federal government and to the state government.
292-8513. If you'd like to join in our discussion, we're talking fracturing here with a panel of experts. Andy Chow is with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Nathan Johnson's with the Ohio Environmental Council. And Tom Stewart is here from the Ohio Oil and Gas Association. Andy, how is the permitting working right now? Who approves these permits? Is it the local authorities? Is it the state authorities?
It seems like it all goes through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and they have inspectors and they have professionals all around the state to look at these. And that was one thing that came out during last week's report, is that in 2010 there were – oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about permits here. So so the permits are definitely going up, and they're definitely getting it out at a faster rate.
So it's the state that does the permitting, Tom Stewart from the Gas Association. The state approves the permits for the fracturing well.
Under Ohio law, Ohio law says that the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has sole and exclusive authority over all aspects of oil and gas development, including the permitting.
So no local community can say no?
No, they can't. And, you know, township trustees do an awful lot of good work. They're very good at taking care of the roads and all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure you want a township trustee putting regulatory policy in place for a well that's 9,000 foot in the ground and 8,000 foot lateral out from that. He's really not ready to do that.
But he knows that creek pretty well, and he knows the danger of possible contaminants, and he knows his or her neighbors.
And that's why you had the State Emergency Response Commission and the local emergency response commissions. And Ohio producers have, ever since the creation of IPCRA, have had to report to them regularly according to the law and do so.
How about
that's why they have that information.
What's the appeal process if I own a farm and my neighboring farm wants to put a well in and I don't want it there?
Now you're talking property rights. Mm-hmm. The person that where that well is being located wants that well there because they executed what's called an oil and gas lease. Mm-hmm. They want to access their property rights, and they don't have either the capital or the expertise to do that. So the only way they can access their property rights is to find expertise for, and capital to do so, and that's called an oil and gas producer. So you enter into a contract to do that. Now, would the neighbor say, I don't want that well there? What he's saying is that I don't want you to exercise your property rights.
Mm-hmm. But if my property is downhill from this well, and there's a spill, and my feed for my livestock or my crops get damaged because of the spill, now you're affecting my property rights. I guess that's the question I have is, what appeal process do they have to say, you know, this isn't a good idea?
The issue is, how do you manage the risk? So you do have chemical disclosure. You do report what you have out there. You do it on state and federal level. And if you are interested to know what's out there at that well, you can go to a website and get that information. Or you can call the DNR or Ohio EPA to get that information. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to your local emergency response commission and get that information. But you just can't spill and just walk away and say, well, it's over. If you have a spill, you must clean it up. You must restore it back to the specifications that it was before the spill happened.
Nathan Johnson from the Ohio Environmental Council. What is your take on the permitting process and how is it working? Is that a place where the state has done well or could improve on it?
Well, you know, in terms of permitting and property rights, that's another area that needs a lot of improvement. And I think Andy mentioned setbacks a little bit ago. That's one aspect of permitting. Right now, it depends on where you live, but the legal setback, if you're a neighbor, a company can locate a well pad anywhere from 100 to 200 feet from an occupied dwelling, basically a home with people in it or a property line. That's obviously far too close. Same thing goes with streams, lakes, running waters in the state. It's only a 50-foot setback. I think it was further away in Monroe County with this fire a couple of weekends ago. But clearly it needs to be pushed back much further, whether it's streams, whether it's homes, property. To speak to, you know, the idea that we can rely on industry to essentially construct their well pads properly, you can't rely on that always.
That's
in fact, this Monroe County well pad, the previous owner actually was cited by ODNR at least once for a serious hillside collapse at this well pad. So that is a concern. There's a question whether this well pad should have been there in the first place. And there were hazardous chemicals stored at the site that went up in the fire.
You told the dispatch, Nathan Johnson, that we have a long ways to go in terms of getting a mature regulatory structure in place. Mm-hmm. Could you define what a mature regulatory structure is? I mean, because it seems like sometimes it's a moving target. Mm-hmm. So what is, in your opinion, a mature regulatory structure?
Well, in one sense, I think it would be a good place to start with getting actual rules on the books in many of these areas of regulation. Chemical disclosure, like I mentioned, is a big one. First responders, whether it's the Ohio EPA or local responders, they have the expertise in responding to emergencies. ODNR has sole and exclusive authority over most oil and gas issues, but they're not experts in responding to emergencies like a giant fire or a discharge of chemicals. That really should be something that should be specified in the statutes that Ohio EPA has this authority. They have the expertise. And we need to look at the severance tax as a vehicle to fund local first responders, to fund Ohio EPA to respond to problems when they arise, and we've been seeing these problems arise. And again, setbacks are another issue. We really need to look at that closely. We just had the legislature pass a law requiring setbacks for wind turbines, some 1,250 feet from property lines. If it makes sense for a wind turbine, we don't see those exploding too often. It certainly makes sense for oil and well operations.
Tom Stewart from the Oil and Gas Association, are those unreasonable expectations for a regulatory environment in which these drillers can operate profitably and make it worth their while?
The issue of setbacks has been hotly debated now for about 10 years. He mentioned, the Ohio Environmental Council mentioned, that you can be 200 feet from a structure. You got to remember that structure is on the property that's under lease. you have to be 500 feet away from the unit boundary line. So the suggestion that you can be 200 feet away from a structure that didn't want you there is not true. It is already law in the state of Ohio that if you have discharge into the streams, Ohio EPA's authority has the authority to manage that spill and oversee its cleanup. That's been in the law since the 1980s. The setback thing, to compare it to windmills, is...
That's a pretty good point.
I think it's
1,200 feet for a windmill, but only 200
But if you look at the setbacks, mm-hmm. it's 1,200 feet from a house, but you can be right on the property line of somebody who didn't want it there. That's not true for oil and gas. And I have seen film of windmills coming unglued, and you don't want to be around them.
All right. We're talking fracking industry here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. When we come back, we'll look at the severance tax issue and the future of this industry and what the next 5 to 10 years might look like. When All Sides with Ann Fisher continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about Ohio's hydraulic fracturing industry, the horizontal drilling that leads to natural gas and oil being extracted from 8 counties, primarily now in the eastern part of the state. My guests, Andy Chow from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Nathan Johnson from the Ohio Environmental Council, and Tom Stewart from the Ohio Oil and Gas Association. Andy Chow, it's almost gone on as long as this industry's been in existence here in Ohio, is how do we tax these folks and how do we get money out of this great boom to help pay for things like the roads that get these trucks to these wells, but also lower the tax burden on other industries and things like that. What is the status of the so-called severance tax at the State House right now?
Well, it's definitely been a long road to where we are now, and the governor's been trying to implement something for a couple of years now. Before the governor came out with his proposal to raise that tax 2.75% to 2.75%, mm-hmm. the House had a proposal at 2.25%. So now it's passed out of the House chamber at 2.5%. They've met in the middle. And now it's sitting in the Senate, and we're waiting to see what happens from there.
But it's not quite that simple, because there are other tax breaks that some argue would actually lower the tax burden on drillers.
Right. There are some tax exemptions and tax holidays and everything like that as well. And that's what some people are not so happy about.
Right now, Ohio's current tax package tops out at 2% of sales on gas and oil drillers, correct, Tom Stewart? Right now, the current
status of taxation specifically on mm-hmm. oil and gas involves two specific taxes, mm-hmm. an ad valorem tax, which is paid to the local government. It mm-hmm. essentially acts as a severance tax, but tries to value reserves based upon what they produce, mm-hmm. and a severance tax, which is volumetric, which, despite people who say that it's never been modernized, is not true. In Senate Bill 165 in 2010, we doubled the severance tax. I actually advocated to double the severance tax.
So, but it's still far less than, say, Pennsylvania, where it's 6.3%, West Virginia, where it's 11.3%.
I'm not sure where you're getting those numbers. There is no severance tax in the state of Pennsylvania. In West
Virginia.
Well,
the tax on drillers, whatever you're going to call it. The taxes, the bottom line is the taxes here in Ohio, even the ones that are proposed, are far less on drillers than they are in the two neighboring states that have a lot of activity.
Well, if you're talking in terms of severance tax, there is no severance tax in New York or Pennsylvania. It's equivalent. You talked about, Andy mentioned tax holidays. We call it cost recovery. If you look at the cost recovery period in the state of Texas, that's probably the most famous oil and gas state, correct? In the state of Texas, you get up to 10 years to recover high-cost gas wells, which are shale wells. And during that rate, it's 3 cents per MCF, which is the rate in the state of Ohio. So for the first 10 years, the state of Texas has the same rate as the state of Ohio. So we're not lower than the state of Texas. In Oklahoma, they have a very same thing where you pay no tax for the first 5 years. We came in, the bill that was proposed, House Bill 375, we came in saying provide a lower tax rate during the first 5 years, similar to what they do in the state of Oklahoma, which is a good track record to find, in order to allow these producers to recover their cost. And we try to come up with a nominal rate across the board that didn't differentiate between energy forms. Proposals before then tried to put 1%, remember, on natural gas and 4%, and sometimes 4.5% on oil. We now know that the oil play isn't working and wasn't going to pan out. And they would have gotten, under the current proposals, they would have only gotten 1% on natural gas if those had been enacted in previous General Assemblies. We came in at 2 and it arrived at 2.5.
Nathan, from the Environmental Council, you mentioned taxes earlier. Do you agree with what Mr. Stewart is saying there, that the taxes are similar to other states, Oklahoma in particular? Mm-hmm.
I can't really get into the fine details of other states per se, aside from the fact that, you know, just the basic rates you see in other states are much higher, like you said. I will add that there is a problem with the cost recovery idea, the idea that the first 5 years you have a lower rate, and that specifically is that is really typically projected to be when the most production is occurring. So that's when, you know, if the state's going to get a lot of revenue, that's when it would occur. So in a sense, you really don't want to lower the burden. It should be higher there, if anything.
Well, you've got to understand how oil and gas works when you hear a statement like that. Yes, all wells decline. All oil and gas wells decline. I've talked to oil and gas producers who are investing in this play, and they say 60% of shale wells never pay out, which means that 40% of the wells has to do the cost recovery for 100% of the investment. If this is such a great thing for the state of Ohio, what you want these producers to do is plow their money back into the ground. And that, therefore, you get into this fundamental debate about whose oil and gas it is.
So if you raise the taxes up to what the governor wants, basically
3%, you know, 2.75.
He originally wanted 3. Would these producers go to West Virginia and Pennsylvania where, whatever you call the taxes, they're higher than they are here?
It's going to narrow the opportunity of the play. One of the reasons that the OOGA has fought so hard on the severance tax is that, one, as we mentioned previously, it placed the highest burden on a part of the state that needed risk-taking and investment the most, the oil window. And that's where the opportunity rises for many more people in the industry. So we believe that when you put 4% on it, or you start hiking anything on a gross receipts basis, and remember, you pay a gross receipts tax whether you're making money or not, you will start narrowing the play down. Will you leave if you're drilling wells in Noble County? No. Will you leave if you're thinking about drilling wells in, I don't know, Western Guernsey County? Might not drill those wells if you take 2.75%. And remember what 2.75 or 2.5 means. We came in with an industry-supported bill at 2%, agreed to 2.5. 2.5 is 10 cat taxes. And we pay the cat tax, too. And some people say, well, what's the difference? You're only going to 2.5 to 2.75. That's one whole cat tax. Mm-hmm. One industry.
All right. Well, we're keeping tax attorneys interested right now. But I think I know it's
money.
I know it's money, but it's money for the drillers. But it's also money for these communities and money for the state.
It's money to recover costs to create an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You cited the production numbers earlier. What's in it for the state of Ohio? Well, you know, we went through 3 polar vortexes last winter, in which the price of natural gas never rose beyond $5. And trading points in the state of Ohio and West Virginia, we were trading a buck negative to what the national price was for natural gas. What that means is that Ohioans had huge tax savings because there's so much natural gas being produced here in the Appalachian Basin.
What were the profits for the national natural gas companies during that time?
What were the profits?
Yeah.
You'd have to go look at the public reports. I hope they're making a profit, because that's the only way that they're going to plow money back into the ground to make this play continue for Eastern Ohio. What's wrong with profit?
No, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with profit, but you mentioned that the gas prices didn't go up and Ohioans getting all these benefits, but these drillers would not be here if they weren't going to make a lot of money. And what the governor wants is a little bit of that tax money to come back to the state of Ohio.
Where it's going back is directly into their pocketbook. Mm-hmm. one of the most well-known research firms on energy out there is IHS's firm. They said that average Ohioans are saving $925 in disposable income because of the price of natural gas, expected to grow to $1,200 in a few years. That's money in people's pockets as compared to New York City, where by the time you got to the second polar vortex, cash prices going into New York City were topping out at $75 in MCF.
Let's move on from taxes and look at the future of this industry in the remaining minutes that we have left here. Nathan Johnson from the Ohio Environmental Council, what is your next step? I mean, you have a Republican governor, you have a Republican legislature that has been averse to regulation, has been averse to raising taxes on the drillers. What is your next play, to use a play on words?
We're renewing our call for passage of the Safer Gas Act. That's a model act that we introduced last September. We saw a lot of these problems, foresaw that they would probably arise like they have. And in that act, like I had mentioned earlier, we have requirements that chemical disclosure be available for water utilities, basically officials that are responding to oil and gas problems, whether it's a fire or a chemical release. And again, like I said, right now there are proprietary chemicals that the only way you can get those is, one, go to court if you're affected by them, or you're anyone other than the chief of ODNR.
Or your
the
doctor.
The statute, if it's a proprietary chemical,
or your doctor.
The statute says that the chief of ODNR can't disclose that to cooperating agencies. So that's a huge problem. That's something we need. The Safer Gas Act is also looking at larger setbacks, something we clearly need from both streams and homes. And we also need better funding for first responders, whether that's through the severance tax or a standalone independent bill.
So you're not looking for a moratorium on fracking. You're not looking to do away with this industry as a whole.
Well, I think we're at a point where it's not really realistic to say that the shale industry is just going to disappear entirely. And I think that ties into the whole idea that, hey, if you raise the taxes a little bit, they're not going to pack up and leave. They're going to stay where the oil and gas is. I don't think it's something that's going to turn around and leave tomorrow. So I think we're looking for better regulation, something we sorely need.
Tom Stewart, we've had two accidents in the past 3 months. Is that an acceptable level of accidents? Is that what we should expect with all of these wells being drilled and all the hoses that could fracture and freak accidents like that? Or is that just an anomaly, do you think?
Well, I don't think that the producer or the service company that was out there on that site is particularly glad that this happened.
No, of course not.
And that's why they plan for these kinds of events and try to react appropriately. We believe in a regulatory structure that, one, allows the industry to thrive, but does everything it can to protect health, safety, and the environment. And in that respect, we don't have a quibble with the Ohio Environmental Council. It's when you start trying to use regulatory policy to limit opportunity is where we get concerned. Or use tax policy to limit opportunity where we get concerned. I'm sometimes amazed at some of the voices I hear down at the State House. You hear these voices like, well, we need a 7 or 8% severance tax, but we also need to ban the industry. I mean, how does that work? I think the regulatory policy is evolving as the industry evolves here in the state of Ohio, providing an Ohio response. You can't duplicate what's done in Texas or Alaska because they'd have different deals down there.
Andy Chow, what's the mood of the legislature right now? I mean, the severance tax may be settled by the end of the year, but will we get these regulations approved as far as pad construction and setbacks and things like that?
I think that every year it seems like they constantly go back to looking at some type of regulation here and there. It seems like as the industry matures, they believe that they need to review and revise the regulations going forward. But I think right now the biggest thing in the State House is definitely the severance tax and what's going to happen from there. And also, just to note, there's also a Supreme Court. We're waiting to hear a response from them on whether state laws trump zoning laws as far as local control goes, too. So that might be something interesting.
How are lawmakers reacting to these two accidents, real quickly?
They've been gone, so they're on summer recess, so I haven't heard much yet. But I'm sure the regular players who have been against oil and gas drilling have been wanting to speak out on this soon.
All right. The industry is evolving. The debate will continue to evolve. My thanks to Nathan Johnson from the Ohio Environmental Council, Tom Stewart from the Ohio Oil and Gas Association, and Andy Chow from Ohio Public Radio, the easiest organization to get out of my lips. Thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.